Welcome to the podcast of Mosaic Church, celebrating diversity within community.
Okay, we are in a series right now, and it's called Exiles. And what we're doing is we're seeing what we're really looking at at Philippians, at Paul, as he is finding himself in a type of exile. He's finding himself in prison. And what we're looking at is, how do we live in a place of exile, in a place where people don't really want us? And so we've been exiled from the community, from the public square, from whatever it is. And so what we presupposed at the start of this series was that we are in a state of exile. Now, it's not to trivialize people who are really like forced out. This is more of a mental exile. This is more of an exile of, we're not at the forefront of the public square anymore or of society. And so people really don't want us around. And in the South, it's slower moving. But if you go out west in our country, it's not. Like, it's already there. But it's even happening here. When I grew up, and I'm not that old, although I am older than I once was, as we all are. I'm 38, and so I graduated high school. My 20-year anniversary reunions this year, and so 20 years ago, you went to school. I mean, it was really like everybody knew anybody who said they weren't a Christian, because it was, oh, you're not, like, because we all are, like, just because our mom and dads told us we were. That was kind of the deal. And so everybody and now that's not the case. And so if you work in a school system or work with students at all, you understand that society in general, it's a lot more commonplace to find people who aren't Christians. And on top of that, no longer are they willing to say we can agree to disagree, but they're very adamantly that we're wrong. And they want to point out the hypocrisy, the scandals that have come through the churches and all this stuff. And they want to throw it back in our face and say, this is why I don't want to have anything to do with you. And so we find ourselves in a period of exile in a certain form. And so the question is, how do we still have a voice with people who don't want to hear us when we find ourselves in these places? And we can go back and we can read what God spoke through Jeremiah, and we can go back and read all the minor prophets, because most of them were written during a period of exile, and to see what God's saying to the people of Israel during that time. And we have brought out pieces of that, but I also want to look. So what we're doing is we're going through Philippians and we're looking at what Paul is saying. How does Paul still have a voice? He's in prison for this belief. But how does he still have a voice? How can he still get this out? How does he still have any influence during exile? And so we've been looking at these different things. And so we've really just been going through the book of Philippians. We started in chapter 1, and now we're in the middle of chapter 2. And so we've gone 3 weeks so far. The first week we talked about boldness. So that was one way to have a voice in exile, was that Paul was bold. He didn't hide behind what he believed. He didn't apologize for it. On the other hand, he wasn't just in people's face saying, oh, yeah, I believe this, so you got to believe it. But he wasn't willing to bend for anybody. He said, this is what I believe. And you can kill me for it if you want, but that's not changing who I believe. And so Paul had this boldness. Week 2, so the second half of chapter 1, we talked about a supernatural clarity that Paul had. Paul was very clear on where God was calling him to and what God had called him for. And so he had this uncommon clarity that kind of permeated. He even said, it's clear to the people who have me in chains of why I'm here. There was this uncommon clarity that allowed Paul to not see the excess stuff and the stuff people wanted to argue about and whatever, but to focus on a goal. And next week, we're going to talk about it a little bit more as we start chapter 3. But then last week, we talked about humility. So the first part of Philippians 2 talks about us imitating Christ's humility and what that looks like. And so this week, we're going to talk about obedience. So if you would, open up your Bible, if you have one, or if you got an app, swipe to it, go to Philippians chapter 2, and we're going to be in verse 12. Philippians 2, verse 12. Paul has just finished this whole thing about the humility of Christ. And he starts out by saying, therefore, which is just another way to say, for this reason, or because of. And so we're talking about if we're going to be humble and if we're going to show this, and this is who we're called to be, then because of that, and we're going to start in verse 12, Philippians 2:12, Paul writes these words, "Therefore, my dear friends, as you have always obeyed, not only in my presence, but now much more in my absence, continue to work out your salvation with fear and trembling. For it is God who works in you to will and to act in order to fulfill his good purpose. And do everything without grumbling or arguing, so that you may become blameless and pure, children of God without fault in a warped and crooked generation. And then you will shine like stars, shine among them like stars in the sky, as you hold firmly to the word of life. And then I will be able to boast on the day of Christ that I did not run or labor in vain. But even if I'm being poured out like a drink offering on the sacrifice and service coming from your faith, I am glad to rejoice with all of you. So you too should be glad and rejoice with me." Let's pray. God, we are thankful for the words that were preserved over thousands of years, that we could read them today, learn from them. Give us a vision for how to have a voice when we find ourselves in a community that doesn't want to listen. We thank you for that, God. In your name, amen. Obedience. Paul is talking about, or begins this section, talking about obedience. And the question that we have to ask ourselves as we're looking at this place of obedience is, why is obedience important? And we have to have a little bit better answer than what I give Jude half of the time. Because Jude is at that age where he asks me why for everything. And does anybody know what my response is? Because I said so. That's the only thing you need to know, Jude. Because I said so. There is no, I'm not getting into the finer points of this. It's just because I said so. But to be honest, that does not work for anybody else, you know? It is not enough in a place of exile for us to say, well, because the Bible said so. Because then that person said, well, I don't believe the Bible, so that makes no difference to me, okay? Jude's not at that intellectual level where he can process that and reply back to me in that way of, Dad, well, this just doesn't make sense because I don't believe what you said, so, you know. But we are in a society that does that, and so for us just to say, this is what Christ says, and we got to do it because he says it, that's not enough. But in cases of faith, we don't have a better answer, quite honestly. And so where does it lead us to? And I think where it leads us to is a place of obedience. Because obedience is putting our faith into action. It's like the song we sang first this morning. If we are God's body, then why aren't his feet moving, his hands working? I think that's how it goes. I'd have to sing it in my head, and nobody wants to watch me do that. But it's kind of like that process, like, okay, we don't really have a better answer for why, and so let's just live it out. This is what Paul's basically saying. He said, this obedience is what brings me joy, because people seeing us live this out, like, changes things. Like, if you just hear one guy, and you're in a movie theater, and just kind of one guy's walking through going, hey, the place is on fire. Place is on fire, just kind of walking through, you're going to think, that guy may not have everything clicking, you know? He may not really know what's going on. But if this guy's saying, hey, the place is on fire, and he's got a hose, he's running, he's spraying stuff, he's kind of going crazy, you're like, oh, he's acting on this. This makes sense. Like, I'm not going to question him. I'm not going to ask why I got to leave the place. I'm just going to go. And I think that's the same thing that Paul is saying to us. Is we don't really have a why. There's this whole mystery, and we're going to talk about it in a second, wrapped around what we believe. There's this unseen God that came to this earth for 30 some odd short years and was gone. So for the most part, and then even then you had to have faith that that was God in the flesh. So there's all this mystery wrapped around it. We can't really prove anything or answer anything. We just have to say, this is how it is. But I think it's why Paul wants to point at obedience, because it's how that is the mechanism by which people believe what we say. It is putting our faith into action. And occasionally, when we believe, or all the time when we believe, we obey. In fact, we have to be honest and say at points in time when we don't believe, then that's really a place where we don't obey, or where we don't believe if we don't obey. Because if you believe what's in the Bible is true, you're going to do it. Like if you really believe that it's the Word of God, the bread of life, that it gives us life and it creates salvation for all people, like you obey that, you do that. And in places where we aren't obedient, we have to be honest. Just say, well, that's a place I don't really believe. Like, I think I got a little leeway there. I think I can kind of excuse this one away and kind of make it say this so that I can live how I want to live. And we do this all the time, me, myself included. But as we obey, we also begin to believe. It strengthens our faith even more. When you believe that there is some sort of harsh punishment for stealing, you don't steal, right? Like if you're in an office and you think, hey, if I take this paperclip, there's a video camera there, and they're going to fire me if I take this paperclip. You probably aren't going to take a paperclip. But when we don't believe that the punishment is harsh or that the punishment is even existent, we're going to do whatever. There's a day coming up, and I don't know if many of you know it. Maybe some of you moms know it. I didn't even know what it was. But my wife was telling me, oh, Cow Appreciation Day is coming up. Does anybody know what that is? That's not like Farm Aid, okay? That's like if you dress up like a cow and walk into Chick-fil-A, they'll give you free food. Apparently. If you believe that and act on it, you may get free food. I'm not willing to do that for free food, personally, because it all could just be a sham. I could go in there looking like a cow and just look like it, you know. And so there has to be some element of faith to make it to do this. But if you believe that you're going to get free food and you love that free food, then you're going to dress up like a cow and walk in. If you love donuts on a certain day of the year, you're going to walk into to Krispy Kreme and talk like a pirate to get a free donut. Like, there's things that we understand that we do because we believe what happens is going to be good. And if we take the Bible and we read it and we believe that it's good, we have no choice but to act on it. It's this obedience that Paul is talking about. It's faith lived out. It's deeds. Which then really points us to a place, in another place in the Bible, where Jesus' half-brother wrote about this thing about faith and deeds. And so if you flip over to James 2, verse 14, we're going to start. James 2, 14, we're going to talk about another part of the Bible where Jesus talks about this obedience. Or where God is speaking through James and talking about this obedience and this faith and putting it into action. Because for so long, as you flip there, I'm just going to flesh this out, because for so long in this, depending on what tradition you grew up in, you know, we talk about deeds, but we were like, well, it's about faith. That's the most important thing, which kind of gets us off the hook from the deeds if we let it. Because it's like, well, I don't have to. Faith is the most important thing. That's what I'm really wanting to focus on, is having the faith that brings me salvation. But if we listen to the words that Jesus' half-brother wrote, okay, this is like Mary and Joseph's natural-born son, James. He's a leader of the church of Jerusalem. And this is what he writes in James 2, 14 through 26. Now, let's just preface this by saying it's a big deal when a brother can point at his sibling and say, yeah, they're right, and I'm going to follow them. Like, that's a big deal, okay? Most of the time, it's the opposite. But James is able to look past all the sibling stuff and say, this is what it is, and this is good. And so when a brother is saying something good about another brother, you better listen up, because that's really important, all right? James 2, 14 through 26. What good is it, my brothers and sisters, if someone claims to have faith but has no deeds? Can such faith save them? James, the brother of Jesus, supposes that if your faith doesn't have action, he's just asking the question. He doesn't really answer it. But can such faith save them? Suppose a brother or a sister is without clothes and daily food. If one of you says to them, go in peace, keep warm and well fed, but does nothing about their physical needs, what good is it? In the same way, faith by itself is not accompanied by action. Faith by itself, if not accompanied by action, is dead. But someone will say, you have faith and I have deeds. Show me your faith without deeds, and I will show you my faith by my deeds. You believe that there is one God. Good. Even the demons believe that and shudder. Even the demons believe that, and they had action to their faith. They shuddered. You foolish person, do you want evidence that faith without deeds is useless? Was it not our father Abraham considered righteous for what he did when he offered his son Isaac on the altar? You see that his faith and his actions were working together, and his faith was made complete by what he did. The scripture was fulfilled that says Abraham believed God, and it was credited to him as righteousness. And he was called God's friend. You see that a person is considered righteous by what they do and not by faith alone. In the same way, and I love the way James did this because he takes Abraham, who was this figure that most people would look at and say, well, I'm not Abraham, I can't be Abraham, so that point makes no sense to me. He brings it down to their level and says, in the same way was not even Rahab the prostitute. Okay, so now we're talking about a prostitute who was nowhere in society. Wasn't she considered righteous for what she did when she gave lodging to the spies and sent them off in a different direction? As the body without the spirit is dead, so faith without deeds is dead. James is telling us that this faith has to have action. And he gives us the example of Abraham, and we know that story. If you don't, Abraham bound his son and put him on the altar and was ready to kill him because God told him to, and that was the only thing he needed. But God provided the sacrificial ram. God saved it. But Abraham had the faith that if God wants him to do this, there must be a good reason for it. And so I'm moving forward. And so that's like the pinnacle. Like all of us can look at that and be like, I don't know that I would ever have that kind of faith. And it's easy, you know. It's easy for me to say, well, Jesus did this. Jesus sacrificed his life. Jesus laid down everything. I'm not Jesus, so I'm off the hook. It's cool. I'm not God in flesh. Sorry to ruin your day, but it's not me. But then he takes Rahab. She was a prostitute. She wasn't Jewish. She wasn't a believer. She had no connection to the Hebrews that were wandering as they're about to go into Jericho and take this city. But yet, James writes about her as a woman who had faith because her faith had action. We even write about her in Hebrews. So there's these places because this lady had faith. She'd heard about this God somehow, and she believed that was the right way and that he could save her. And he did. And so faith without action is dead faith. And we know what that is when we walk into a room to greet a family and their deceased loved one is behind them in a coffin. And we know what that looks like. We know how that feels to walk up to there, to pay the respects, and just to see like a shell, something just laying there. That's not that person any longer. They're gone, you know? And we know what that looks like. And James is equating faith that has no deeds to that same thing. It's just a shell of what could be, but it's not there. Faith without deeds is dead. And so that encapsulates a major majority of what Paul is saying. To have a voice in exile, we have to be obedient. Because when we obey and the world then looks at us, we have a voice because we're pointing to something bigger than ourselves. But then he tells us, as we keep reading in Philippians, back to Philippians, so with this obedience, I'm proud. You brought me great joy. But he says, work out your faith then with fear and trembling. And what he's telling us is, like, your faith is your own. You have to work it out. You have to take the convictions that the Holy Spirit's given you and live into that. And what that's doing is it's giving us permission to be who God's created us to be, and it gives us permission to not look at others and judge them for what God's called them to. Now, that's not to say, and this is, we're not going to get off on the subject today of what it looks like when we're talking about people who are living outside of the covenant of God, or people who claim to be, and they're doing, there's other scriptures that talk about judging fruit, people by their fruits and all this. Well, what I think Paul is talking about is believers who have differences. And their differences aren't differences of, did Jesus come? Was Jesus Son of God? But it's like, I equate it to today, like there's some arguments in the church between evangelism or discipleship, you know? There's arguments in the church between local and global missions. And that, you know, God's created us all differently. God's given us all different passions. God's given us all different directions. God has given us all different gifts. And we can use them. And the gifts are different. And it brings us to a place where we're passionate about one thing. And passion's great. Or we're not really that interested in that thing because it's not really our cup of tea. But the beautiful thing is, in a community, God's created other people who that is their cup of tea. And so working together, people who really want to evangelize their city. And then you get a group of people over here who's like, oh, I'm not really into that as much as taking someone who believes in Jesus and just teaching them about and getting them to develop as a Christian. But you get both of these people in the community working together. That's beautiful. If you get both of these people in a community saying that's wrong because it should be about discipleship, and that person's like, well, that's wrong because it should be about evangelism, bringing to me. That's arguments. That's Paul saying you got to work it out in fear and trembling. You got to dig deep in who God's created you to be. We got some people say, well, global missions over here isn't that important because we need to care for people at home, which is true. Then we got other people who say, well, people at home have more money, even the poor people, than the poor people in these other. So, and that's true. But when we have them both working together and saying these are both two great needs, and we got to shape this, and we got to figure out a way to help at home and help abroad, and how's God gifting us to do this? Then we're working together. Then we're taking this thing and we're saying this is worth it. And so we can be free of judgment towards other believers because we have a lot to work on ourselves. We have to work out our own faith and fear and trembling. We can't look at someone else and say, well, their faith led them to do this. Like Peter and Paul were kind of dealing with this whole thing. And Paul was kind of to the place where God was saying, yeah, you can eat whatever it is you want to eat. You can drink whatever it is you want to drink. You don't have to follow these dietary restrictions that's going on. But you can't do that. You can't have that freedom if you're too busy worrying about, well, is this person following my conviction? Is this person doing what I think? And Paul's saying, so work it out. Work it out in fear and trembling, which I think really is helpful for us because a lot of times we want to take the Bible and crystallize it into our own form, okay? This is the way God worked through me. This is the way God finally got to me, and this is the way it has to be. And we like to crystallize it and say, this is it. This is the expression of Jesus. That's why when you go into different parts of the world, like we like to crystallize, like I've been in the mountains of the Himalayas where the pictures of Jesus were all brown, you know? And I've worshiped in South America a lot where the pictures of Jesus really looks Latino, you know? And then you go into most churches in America and Jesus is white as he can be, you know? We take this thing and we crystallize it into who we are. Paul's saying, you got to work out your faith and fear and trembling. If it was one way, if God's expression to us was one way, 20 years ago or so, maybe 15, we got into this really big debate in Christian circles in America about should it be contemporary worship or should it be traditional worship? Paul said it has nothing to do with that. Like, work out your own faith and fear and do what you think is right and move forward. You ain't got time to worry about it if someone's doing traditional worship saying, oh, that's dead, that's not working, or someone's doing contemporary music, God's not in that. Like, we got to work together. And the only way we can do that is if we're focusing on ourselves, which seems really counterproductive. If we're focused on what God's calling us to be, how are we working together? That seems very narcissistic. But it's not. Paul's saying, work it out in fear and trembling. If it was a very static thing, do you not think that Paul, one of the apostles, would have looked at us and said, it is this way? But he didn't. He said, work it out in fear and trembling. What we believe is shrouded in mystery. There's a lot, that's why we don't have an answer to that why question, because we don't know. Like, we haven't seen it. People, I had a conversation not long ago about someone, about the end times. We don't know. I mean, ultimately, we'll find out one day, but I don't know. We can read the scriptures, we can try to interpret it, and everybody interprets it different ways, and that's great, because that's what Paul's talking about. There's so much mystery. We've got to work it out in fear and trembling in ourselves because it's holy. He didn't say just work it out. He said work it out in fear and trembling because it's a holy, holy thing. And to do that, we have to get into all these different things. We have to pray. We have to let the Spirit lead us. We have to kind of do this thing. And I don't know if Paul was talking to this group of people because there was some theological difference they were having, and he was just saying, look, quit arguing about this stuff. There's one singular thing that's important. It goes back to that uncommon clarity, that supernatural clarity we talked about. Paul didn't care who was preaching Jesus. If you go back and read Philippians 1, he says that. Like, some people are saying this, and they're not part of us, and they're trying to say this to bring us down, but I don't care because it's all lifting Jesus up. Paul had this uncommon clarity. And so it may be Paul's just re-saying that again in chapter 2. But we're all gifted different. We all have different passions. We all have different desires. We have to live into that and not worry about how God's gifted someone else. Not be jealous because we want their gifts, because God's given us what we wanted. But also not be judgmental, saying that can't be right because that's not the way I see it. Because the God who works in you to will and act, in order, he does that in order to fulfill his good purpose. And so celebrate with each other. Celebrate the differences. Celebrate the similarities. But celebrate because God's working it all in each of us. Those passions, those giftings are all different, and God's working it out. And then finally, I think the one big way that we have a voice in our society in a time of exile is really focused on verse 14 through 18. Do everything without grumbling or arguing, so that you may become blameless and pure, children of God without fault in a warped and crooked generation. You can even hear it in Paul's voice a little bit. Paul's saying, like, you want to be different? You want to stand out? Do all this stuff without grumbling. Don't be arguing amongst yourselves. He says, then you will shine like stars among them in the sky. We want to have a voice, be a community that has a voice in exile, in a society that doesn't want to hear us, that doesn't want to have anything to do with us. We got to work together. We got to celebrate each other's gifts. We got to work this stuff out in fear and trembling. Be obedient to God and to do it all without grumbling. Because Paul says, if we do that, we may become blameless and pure, children of God without fault in a warped and crooked generation. And then he goes on and says, then you will shine among them like stars in the sky as you hold firmly to the word of life. So it goes back to that boldness, not bending in what God's called us to do, but moving forward. And Paul celebrates, then I'll be able to boast on the day of Christ that I did not run or labor in vain, that I didn't teach you, that I didn't share with you, that it was worth it. That we shine like stars. But I want to stop there because we grumble too much about too many silly, silly things. We focus too much on what's unimportant and neglect the singular clarity of that Christ is the most important thing. We want to argue about how baptisms take place in a church. Infants or adults, sprinkle or dunk, you know, during worship or in a mass thing during it. Like, we want to argue about these things. Jesus looked at the guy hanging on the cross beside him and said, today you'll be with me in paradise. He didn't say, come on, get off the cross. Let's do this baptism thing first. We got to get that done. Like, he's basically, what's happening now is most important. All this other stuff is symbolism. We want to argue about, you know, types and styles of worship, how the Spirit moves among us. None of that is of singular importance. What is of singular importance is that Christ was crucified, that Christ died, was resurrected, and ascended into heaven, and seated at the right hand of God the Father Almighty. Those creeds that we recited for thousands of years now is what's singularly important, that we believe that this Creator came, sacrificed himself so that we could live with him. And that needs to be our focus. As a church, as we move outside these walls, that needs to be our message. I've seen churches before, and you may have too, that they like to, oh, well, come to our church, you'll like it because there's, you know, it's laid back. You can wear whatever you want. The pastor wears jeans. He doesn't wear skinny jeans, though. Remember that. That's a no-no. It's written in the Bible somewhere, I promise. For me, anyway. I worked out that part of my faith in fear and trembling. And but they, you know, and I've heard this, or come to our church because We don't get into all that mess. We worship God with reverence. I want us to be a church that goes out into society and says, come to Mosaic because we worship God. And I don't care how that happens. Are we worshiping God? Are we celebrating God in all that we do? That gets back to where we talked about. Last week, we talked about our vision a little bit. And I'm a firm believer in having a vision that everybody can grab a hold of and everybody can share, which is why we took the pages that we had, that you guys had done lots of work on and built into this vision thing, and we condensed it down to three words: to love, to serve, and to grow. Because I'm really a firm believer. You know, in the Old Testament says, where there is no vision, the people perish. And we need to have a vision, but I think the top part of that vision needs to be that love. Like, that's where we worship God. Like, that's what we do. Everything else is an expression of that. Everything else is really the deeds. And they're important. They have to be there. There's a reason love is first, though. That's what I want. I don't want us going out to community and say, hey, come to Mosaic. You'll like the color of the carpet, or you'll like the music, or you'll like the lights, or you'll like the anything. You'll like, you probably won't like Friar, but you'll like his wife. She's pretty cool. Or I want us to be a church that's known of, go out in the community. What's Mosaic? They love Jesus. I don't really, like, and worship may be different from week to week, but they love Jesus and they act on that. And so I want to continue to encourage you guys to do is to keep your eyes open as you walk through, as you walk through your lives, wherever it be, whether you're in Greenville and working or school and Easley or wherever you find yourself, keep your eyes open to areas of need that you can meet, that you can be hands and feet of God. And if it's not something you can do, maybe the Change for a Dollar can do it. We got this Change for a Dollar, and we ask you guys each week to only bring $1, no more, no less, to see what God can do through that. And God has already, through this little church, done some pretty cool stuff with that. But we also rely on you guys to bring us needs and say, hey, I know of something that's going on in someone's life. Do we have money in the change? Yeah, we probably do. Call me up. Let me know. But keep your eyes open. But in all things, we have to wrap it with obedience. To be obedient to what God is calling us to. And quite honestly, what God's calling Friar to is probably different than what God's calling Becca to, which is probably different than what God's calling Al to. And we all have to celebrate that, but be able to move forward. Because someone said, like the programs of the church, what are we going to do? We need to create this thing. I don't want to create a church that we're creating programs for you guys to take in. What I'd rather have is for Will to say, hey, Friar, I got a passion about this. Can I do it? Yeah, do it. How can we support you? Angie, Friar, I got to think, yeah, that becomes the ministry of the church, not these programs that we create and then you come and consume them and then leave for a week and then come back a week later and consume them. But I want us to, like, I want the ministries of the church to be run by you guys, not vice versa. I don't want to be running these ministries that you may or may not have anything to do with, but I want you guys to come to me and say, this is a passion I have. This is a need I have. There's a bunch of kids and I want to do a mentoring thing after school. Yeah, how can we support you? We got space. Can I help you recruit people? Can I do, you know, whatever it is. Be praying. Where is God moving your heart, your passion, your life to do these things? Because I think that is where we as a church become effective, whether we're many or few. If we are each living in our passions that God has called us to, and then the church is supporting that, be it with financial resources or manpower or prayer or whatever it is, then I think that's a church that has a voice in society no matter what the size or what the location or what the circumstance we find ourselves in. But then we're wrapping that all up in obedience. So this morning, we'll pray in a few minutes and have a time where we do the prayers of the people, and then after that, we'll have the response. And during that response, I'll be available for prayer, and the Change for a Dollar will be here, and the offering baskets are back, and the ladies will be singing, and so there'll be a number of different ways for you to respond, but one thing that I want us to do is to spend some time praying about what God's passion for you, what God is moving you to, like, not to make the church a place where you're consuming stuff, but what can I add to it? What can I bring to it? What passion can I do that the church can then support me in doing? Because that's a more effective model for ministry. in our community. And so part of that's just going to be you praying, like, God, what is your vision for me? What is it? You know, where is my passion? And then move in it. Take the steps. Be obedient. Talk to me. Talk to one of the elders. We'd love to support those things. The last thing I want to do is sit around Monday through Thursday or Friday and think about, okay, what programs can I create? What ministry that someone may or may not like? I'd rather someone come in and say, Father, I'm so passionate about this. I want to do it. And I'll say, great. How can we support you? Becca's got something in the hopper now, which is cool, with some horses, which is awesome. I don't like horses, personally. One fell on top of me. I was hiking through the Himalayas, and a horse fell on top of me in a river. It's a long story, but I have issues with horses. But Becca has a passion for that, and so she's moving forward in that. In fact, you'll get an email later where she's kind of sharing some of that vision with us. And so that's just one example, but each of us have something. It may be as grand as what the vision God's given Becca, and it may be something that lasts for 3 weeks and impacts somebody's life and then dies. But that's how organic life is, right? It's a seed that's planted, it dies in the ground, it grows, and then it dies again. And that's how God created us all. And so we may have ministries that last a short time. We may have ministries that last a long time. But I want them to be ones that we all take ownership of in various ways. So I want us to be praying about that, quite honestly. And next week, we get into my favorite chapter of the Bible, really, is Philippians 3. But this week, we're going to focus on obedience. What has God called you to? We kind of set out the vision of the church, and we're going to keep promoting that, but what has God called you to? How has God called you to live into that?
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. If you would like more information, please visit us at www.mosaiceasley.org.